is the fourth session of Peace Starts at Home with Mickey Cashton.
Welcome back. I would like to start with connecting with what people did this past week with what we did last week. What stayed with you? What did you try to put to use? What did you learn as a result? What questions did that leave you with? If any of you are willing to be first. I was hoping, Maria Teresa, that you would start, and then Jean, you would be next. So I was hoping, because I remember that we did some pretty intensive work last week, and I wanted to see the results.
Well, yes, it was pretty intense, and I have nothing but gratitude. And by the way, when things touch me very deeply, I can't keep my tears back. So.
You know, just so you stop apologizing about it, you and everyone else, I want you to know something that I heard Marshall Rosenberg say many times in the past, which touched me deeply. He said, if we were in pure giraffe consciousness, we would be crying 100% of the time, half the time in gratitude and half the time in pain.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Take the time to experience the gratitude, because gratitude is fuel. Take it and sit in it. Don't try to kind of like push it aside so you can speak. Recognize the beauty of the feelings that you have. Allow them to be, absorb them, integrate them, and then speak. That's very different from suppressing them.
Thank you.
Do you have a sense that that happened for you?
I do have a sense. I feel deep. I mean, even before you said any of that, and even this afternoon before this call, in thinking about some of what has happened this weekend, I have been feeling tremendous gratitude, and tears have been in my eyes. You know, it's like, yeah.
I know that you're feeling a lot of gratitude, and what I would really love to hear is, were you able to do something different in your interactions with your husband?
Yes, and that's why there is so much gratitude, a feeling of gratitude, because we had another exchange that was difficult. And what was really interesting for me was to notice that when he went off, I was able to stay present. And I simply said, you know, I need time out right now. And for the first time that I can remember, the time out was not filled with fear.
Mm.
Just like it's what is, you know. And he was projecting on me something that I just didn't relate to. I mean, and I realized a few minutes after, I thought, if he stays with this, his day is going to be ruined, because I can see that he's in so much suffering. So we talked about it, and indeed, he softened into, he opened up and told me about his sadness. And in that, I remembered what you said about really opening up to my own vulnerability and sharing with him. And I noticed the magic that happened. It was like the quality of the conversation went several decibels down. You know, it was like the whole thing just quietened down. And I found myself again talking with him as opposed to being in reaction mode. It was amazing. At the same time, I could see the pain that it was in him. And I was feeling very much that pain too. So it was a day full of pain. But this morning, I said to him, you know, what I would really like to do is to really understand what all of this means to you and why you have this reaction to my saying so and so. And he began to speak, and our conversation of yesterday got him to understand something about himself. And he shared with me about how he saw me, which is exactly the way that I have felt. He saw me as, you are problematic, and therefore you're not to be really paid attention to. And I have been for years trying to tell him, look, you're not seeing me. Well, this morning he said, I protect myself. I tell myself to go into NVC mode because I feel that you are so problematic. And I was able to hear that. And I thanked him for it, and I said, thank you. I wanted you to know that that's exactly the sense that I have had for all these years, that this is how you've seen me. And yet whenever I tried to talk to you about it, you reacted. And I felt like never understood. Then he went on to say more about it. And what he said, it wasn't easy to hear. But, you know, it was interesting. In the past, it would have sent me into despair and incredible pain and loneliness.
Yeah.
And today I was able to hear it and say to myself, this is enough for one day. I will speak with him more about this. I will investigate it because I'm interested in this relationship going someplace.
Oh, I'm just thrilled because that is exactly what ends up happening when you start connecting at this level. There is magic. The magic is not that suddenly you have no conflict, suddenly you have no problems. The magic is that you can remain human with each other when the issues arise. And that's what I'm hearing from you.
That's how I felt. I felt this is a world different than what I have experienced before. And before, it used to make me feel like I was a little child in the middle of nowhere, helpless, alone. And today, I just felt like I'm in my body, and this is the beginning.
So, thank you.
I am thrilled.
I know that these things happen all the time. I just don't get to hear about them always. This is the nice thing about having a weekly class, is that I get to hear these stories. It's extraordinarily nourishing for me to hear it.
I can't thank you enough. My gratitude, because I feel, Mickey, that it is your authenticity that I am communicating with, and it's what causes the magic to happen for me. I can talk to somebody else who can be telling me intellectually what is the right thing to do, and it won't happen. But I feel that you understand, and that is the magic for me, that something that I can let go and open up.
Thank you. I really and truly believe that a big part of it is that I really have thrown away completely all analytical theories. I don't believe in shadow. I don't believe in ego. I don't believe in projection. I don't believe in all these categories that are used to explain people's behaviors. Really and truly looking for the human needs only.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with me.
Thank you. I want people like you everywhere I go because it's so sustaining for me. Sometimes there is such a sense that I am like way out on a limb doing something so strange and weird and unusual. And then hearing from people like you, it's an affirmation that I'm doing something that has a real ability of contributing. Okay, so Jean.
I was very, very touched by this last sharing. So much, I mean, I'm just almost shaking. It was just so profound for me. Maybe it just touched my heart in a particular way. So what I'm about to share about my own reflection or learning from this last week, and it isn't just this last week, but maybe over several weeks, is how I've been able to grow out of the habit of offering understanding and empathy almost as a defense mechanism for myself, to just be with another person in their way, leaving myself out of the picture, and how gradually, maybe one small step at a time, I've been able to express what's truly going on for me more, I don't know, more comfortably, but it's just become more a part of how I can become closer to other people. And that's such a joyful thing for me to be able to do that and to notice that despite what fears I might have about being more transparent or more vulnerable or maybe being the cause of someone else's pain by expressing that, it's such a huge relief, and that it does bring me closer. Certainly to myself, but often to the other person as well.
Thank you. So let's hear from Shannon and then Natasha.
I think one thing that was really moving to me was just reflecting on your post called Love and World Transformation.
Uh-huh.
And just thinking about like my relationship with my father and how much of a change it feels in me if I imagine that there's the capacity to love in him or maybe, and there's the desire and like the resources or the, his ability to like tap into that is maybe part of the disconnect rather than assuming that he doesn't have that care for me. I just felt pretty big to think about it in that way after reading your blog.
I hope you find a way to let him know that. And I wouldn't tell him, well, you don't have the capacity to tap into it.
Yeah.
The way I would frame it is something like, Dad, I want you to know that I've done some reading and reflecting, and it's occurring to me that even though you haven't found a way to show me your love and care in a way that I can see it and hear it and receive it,
yeah.
Still there.
Yeah. Yeah, that would definitely be stepping into vulnerability for me with him.
Yeah.
Which
and
I'm
you never
still...
know what it might open on his end.
Yeah.
No
yeah.
stress, no pressure. I like to think of these things as inspirational pulls rather than should pushes.
Mm-hmm.
Offering you this vision of that possible conversation as something to dream about and towards.
Definitely. I did have a surprisingly hopeful conversation with him about a week ago, and I was able to open up, and it was because of wanting to try stepping into vulnerability and express something that's been painful for me to him, and that felt pretty huge to do that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sasha and then Ilona.
I guess what I've been noticing this past week is that there's certainly some people with whom practicing NVC is easy, and it feels like I can put on those giraffe ears. And you know, I was just talking with a student of mine just before I came who was very angry at himself, and I was just reflecting back to him, and I think at the end he saw how it was important for him to be compassionate with the self. But then on the flip side this morning, I had this very difficult conversation with this woman I'm working with, and you know, I'm about to launch this new methodology for kids, and it's almost like I'm so afraid that I'm going to lose control of my project because she's got a lot of clout and, you know, she's been behind it, but I've really made her into, you know, there's an enemy image there, and it was very, very hard for me to move past it this morning. What I'm seeing is that it's challenging for me to be empathic with my own needs. It was very difficult for me to see what her needs were, and it was like I was very hard on myself about how I handled the conversation.
You're not pleased with how you handled it?
No.
So you're not pleased because you weren't sufficiently empathic or sufficiently self-caring or both?
I think sufficiently honest, and I find that where I go is I quickly demonize her as being a bully and being very aggressive, and I don't stand for my own needs, then I become self-conscious and I think, oh my God, what an awful conversation. I tried to stand up for myself and it was just awkward. So no, I don't know if I was very clear or honest. It's like a need for self-expression that I find is thwarted. I don't know if that answer makes sense.
Yes, it does. It does. And so I want to take a moment of time. I have a sense, obviously, I don't know you, but it's pretty common for us when we have a judgment of someone to be stuck in self-expression. It seems like we either tell them what our judgment is or we can't tell them anything honest. Does that sound?
That is it. And we've had a very conflicted, you know, the one time I was honest, it came out, it was judgmental. I thought, oh God, I don't want to do that again. And yet even though I didn't do it again in terms of my words, the inner position was completely judgmental. Yeah.
Would you be her for a moment? I want to just try out being you. Even if you're not going to be able to pull it off, it might help you internally.
Okay.
So tell me what your judgment of her is, that she's a bully, and what else?
She's like having an encounter with her is like being run over by a Mack truck.
Uh-huh.
A lot of power, a lot of privilege, a lot of political power, and she's a doer in the world. And I put a lot of my theory about her is that she's really in the masculine world and go, 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 push, push, push. And she's a doer.
Okay. So give me a name.
Laura.
Laura? Okay. First of all, big piece of revelation that I had one day is the kind of conversation that I'm about to try to model is one that you have at a time when there isn't an active conflict going on. There may be a lot of context conflict, but not in a time of being emotionally charged about a conflict. That's what I mean by active conflict. So that you can start a conversation. It might become charged later. You start it at a time when you're calm and think the other person is calm. Not when you're already embroiled in mutual reactivity. That's really important, whether it's this person, whether it's spouse, whether it's child, whether it's friend, it doesn't matter. We can't have our best transformative conversations when we are in reactive mode. This is one of the things that Maria Teresa was able to do in her story, is to have the conversations in a way where there was pain, there wasn't reactivity. So I'm coming to talk to you. And Laura, I want to take a couple of minutes of your time because the project that we're working on is so important to me, and I really, really want to find the best way for us to work together. Could you give me a couple of moments of your time to explore that?
Sure.
So I want to also hear from you as Laura. Were you totally okay with the way that I said this?
Yeah, I think Laura would be too. I think this morning I was trying to address, you know, I was just saying I feel really concerned. I feel deeply uneasy about something.
Notice that I didn't do any of that. What I led with, and this is, you know, we tend to lead with feelings that are often intense and with expressions of unmet needs. That creates anxiety for the other person. I tend to coach people on leading with what is the outcome that you want? And especially if you can frame the outcome that you want in a language that the other person will recognize that they also want that, you're already winning for both of you. But I want to say it the two ways. So you feel the difference, the emotional difference on your end when I say it one way or the other. So one way is, Laura, I feel deeply concerned and anxious whenever we work together. Something happens that makes it not work well, and I really don't know what to do. Could you talk with me for a couple of minutes about this? That's one.
I felt really contracted when you were saying that.
Of course. Now listen to the same message said differently. Laura, I'm coming to you because the project that we are collaborating on is so important to me. I have a sense that both of us are really passionate about it, and our collaboration is so important. I really want to find a way for us to work together as best as possible to make it work, and I want to talk with you about how we could do that. Would you give me a couple of your minutes? You feel the difference?
Yeah.
You want it, she wants it. Neither one of you believes it's possible. By asking it, by framing it like this, you're already making it a tiny bit more possible. See that?
But then when she says yes...
Okay, no, that's just one step. That was step one. Now look at how I take self-responsibility for my experience 100%. And then because the topic of today is connection requests, even though we're kind of like talking about what has happened in the past week, I want to weave that in since I'm doing an example here. So keep all of you, keep your attention focused on that thing that I now said, which is self-responsibility, how I lead by what I want, and the connection requests that I make. So there's something that's a little vulnerable for me to talk about in terms of something that happens to me, and I'm hoping that you can find a way to respond to me with gentleness about what I'm sharing, because I feel sensitive about it. When I interact with you, somehow I find myself unable to be in my full power. I'm not sure why it happens. I know it interferes with my ability to collaborate with you. And I'm curious if you've noticed that. You see what I mean about self-responsibility?
Yeah, I'm really listening to that. Yeah.
It is 100% true what I said. I'm being 100% honest.
Yeah.
I'm just not blaming her for it. And by asking her this, the connection request that I made, which is, you know, have you noticed that? By making that connection request, I am inviting her into partnership in holding with me my issue. See that?
It's interesting because it makes me also very curious about, I really have no idea how she'd respond to that. I think, given, you know, some of the things that she said, I mean, she's, you know, said you're really scary, or I think she'd be very surprised by that comment.
And that kind of surprise is the same kind of magic that Maria Teresa was talking about. I don't know if you heard her story. I think you came a little late. It's, you take the conversation to a different level. Whether she noticed or not, you are engaging her in a different way. So she says yes, she says no. Then you can say, well, that's useful to know. Let's say that you haven't noticed it. And I think if we're going to collaborate in a sustainable way over time, it would be useful for us to explore this dynamic and help me overcome it. And I know the moments when it happens, I don't necessarily feel it in the moment, but I know I can tell you now when it happens, and it's pretty predictable. It's when you say this kind of thing or do that kind of thing. That's how I react to it, is I lose my sense of power. So can you help me strategize what I can do in those moments so that we can keep engaging in the efficient way that you like, while still keeping me in the picture without me getting lost? No blame. Shocking, isn't it?
It is. It's very powerful, and I'm also recognizing my initial judgment was, oh my God, how mortifying, I sound so weak. And
yep.
Yet...
Sounding weak to yourself, powerful outward.
Yeah. That would be something, to really claim my own humanity.
Yeah.
Which is the work that we're doing with youth. So I think it's an important one.
Right. Okay, you got your work cut out for you, I think.
Yes, thank you so much.
Sure. Okay, Ilona and then Gosha.
It feels like all I want to do is talk about what you just said, because I have a sister who is just like what it sounds like Jean is dealing with at work. And
quit talking like this, Ilona, because you reinforce your powerlessness when you say, my sister is just like that. You keep reinforcing it every time you say it. Instead, I want you, even to yourself, to say, I lose my power in the same way that I heard Natasha lose hers. If you say, my sister is like that person, you are blaming your sister, and you're not going to be able to handle it. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I'm so identified with, I guess, being a victim.
Yes.
Because I could just see her, you know, this person, her colleague or her boss or whoever it is, that the other person might say, well, then you need psychological help. I can't help you. You know, you need to be seeing a therapist. I'm so identified with the other person's viewpoint. Like I know what their response is already. That's how conditioned I am by it.
But you don't actually know it. You imagine it. You don't actually know. It might be their response, and it might not.
I mean, it does totally change the flavor of the conversation. It does totally change the direction.
Mm-hmm. And even if the person says you need a therapist, it would only be hard to hear that if you have difficulty accepting yourself.
If she said that to you, then what would be your response?
I could say, you know, this is a little bit, this is one of those moments. Hearing you say this.
Oh, my God, yeah. Oh, yeah, I hadn't even thought of that. Wow, I'm so conditioned, Mickey.
Yeah. And Ilona, don't get it wrong. I'm conditioned in my own ways. Don't think that I can handle any situation gracefully. Not the case. That could be one way, you know, like this is one of those moments. It was hard for me to hear this. And I still want to work with you because this will continue to happen. Even if I go see a therapist, which by the way, I have a therapist. It hasn't resolved this. Might resolve it in the future, and we are working together now. So I really would like your support in figuring out if there are concrete steps that we could do. Now maybe what I need to do is to slow you down. I'm not sure. I just want to be able to talk with you about it. Are you open to it?
That sounds great, and it sounds strong.
Yeah. And it's the strength that comes from self-acceptance.
I'm not even sure if I can go any further. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. Just enjoy the opening of your heart. Breathe with it. Accept your feelings. Will be with you, so you don't have to say anything. Stay with it, and you will be amazed how quickly it gets absorbed, and you will find your voice again.
Yeah, I believe that. You know, it's just a matter of having like a practice room, you know, which this series is. It's like a practice room, and having some modeling. So rare to have the modeling.
So the wave came and went and you were able to survive it without having to suppress it.
Yeah, it's just doing it in front of, you know, the particular person is it feels like that's another thing. But, you know, I guess it starts just by hearing another way.
Yes. If you keep saying I'm sorry every time you cry and try to suppress it, you will stay in the same place that you are. If you use every moment when the option exists to outrageously occupy the fullness of yourself.
That should be on a banner someplace. Mm-hmm. Outrageously occupy the fullness of yourself. Wow, that should be on a banner.
Okay, great. Take a piece of paper, write it down. Decorate it, laminate it, enlarge it, put a magnet on it, and put it on your fridge.
Yeah, I completely identify with what Maria Teresa was saying about you. You know, you just seem so radical, Mickey. I mean, you just...
Oh, my God, yeah. Tell me about it.
Is that okay if I just leave it with this?
Is it really all you want? It is okay. The question is this really all you want?
Well, I think that was a bigger teaching than anything else. I don't really have a lot to share, but that went very, very deeply.
Take a few breaths before I turn to the next person. Okay. Hi, Gosha.
I don't think I'm making any progress. Quite contrary. I seem to be behaving worse and worse.
So I would like to take some time with you to bring in some gentleness into where you are. Are you game for that?
Yes.
I have a sense that in this circle so far, we have created a little bit of a magical island, and I am wondering if you feel that, that there is love and acceptance in this virtual room.
Yes.
So I would like to invite you then to take a step of courage and pick a behavior that you feel some shame about and bring it to us to hold together with you.
Yelling.
Yelling? You remember a particular incident?
Of course.
Who did you yell at?
My son.
Your son? How old is your son?
5.
5?
Yes.
Okay. So let's, before you get into details, I just want to take a breath to thank you for saying this. Because I know that you and just about any parent in the world would so wish to never yell at your child. That it breaks your heart that he ends up having to experience this, right?
Yes.
Let's just hold that grief, that tragedy together. That you haven't found a way for your son to have an experience of peace and ease and calm in his upbringing. Despite how much you want him to have that, you haven't found a way to give it to him.
No.
Let's just be with that for a moment, all of us together. Take full room for the enormity of this grief that lives in you about this. Are you breathing?
Yes.
Are you crying?
Yes.
Let yourself cry and very peacefully, when there is the next thing that comes for you to say, just say it. Your time. While all of us are holding the tragedy. I have a sense that you haven't really allowed yourself to grieve this deeply. Is that true?
I don't know. I yelled at him in such a horrible way that I myself was traumatized, like for 2 days afterward. And I can't imagine how frightening it had been for him.
Yeah. I will get to that. I'm just asking, what you are doing now is you are grieving that that happened.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if that is something you have allowed yourself to do in the past, after yelling at him, if you've allowed yourself to grieve this deeply.
No, I don't think.
This is a critical component of the possibility that this pattern will change. Because your grief is a direct measure of your love. Does that ring true for you? If you didn't care about him, this wouldn't be sad.
Yes, that's true.
So your grief allows you to access the pure, clean love instead of the guilt, the shame, the judgment, the anger, all of these other things. This grief is healing. And what I'm saying to you, true for any of us in any of our relationships, being able to really grieve and mourn our actions that don't contribute to the other person's well-being, is a very essential part of our ability to transform the relationship.
What does it exactly mean to grieve? Just be there with the sadness?
Yes. Without trying to make sense, to figure out, to make it go away, to change it, to solve the problem, to know what to say to him, to think about what to do next time, to think about why I did this, nothing, none of that. Just being in the flow of the sadness. So I have an intuitive sense that we can now shift to something else, and I want to check with you if that feels true to you.
Yes.
So what I want to shift to is to see if we can dig up what the challenge in the moment is that leads you to yell. So what happened in that interaction? What happened before you yelled?
We agreed on what he's supposed to do and what I'm going to do. He was supposed to be doing one thing and I was supposed to be doing other things. And then he didn't follow. He was coming and interrupting me.
So he didn't do what you wanted him to do, and instead he came and started talking to you while you were doing something else.
Yes. And then I repeatedly asked that he goes back and follows on our agreement. I have a system of, I want you to go and do this, and then when I get frustrated, I just communicate that I'm getting frustrated. Please go. I'm going to get angry if you don't. My feeling is that I give him information of where I'm sort of heading towards. And he asked for extra time, and I said, okay. And yet he wasn't following. And I just snapped at some point. I snapped. I felt that I gave so much extra time. I gave so many warnings. And I asked so many times that he followed on the agreement, and it just wasn't happening. And I just snapped. But, you know, it surprises me because I don't know when that happens. I don't know when that's going to happen. I don't have an insight. It just takes over me totally. And then I'm not able to stop it. And that's what worries me. That's what frightens me.
Yes. So what I am hearing, there's a lot there. The immediate piece that I'm hearing is that you feel progressively more helpless.
Yes.
And my guess is that helplessness for you is intolerable.
That's true.
And so in the long run, for you to be able to cultivate the capacity to tolerate helplessness would increase your ability to have choice. You see that? You lose choice in the face of helplessness.
But how do I reverse that?
So, for example, what we did earlier about staying with the sadness is related, because I would imagine that having so much feeling is already uncomfortable and a little helpless. Is that true? I was wondering whether even having such an intensity of sadness creates some degree of helplessness for you.
Yes.
So the fact that we made room for the sadness and surrounded you with enough love that you could relax into it increases your capacity over time. It's not a short-term strategy. It's a long-term, ongoing practice and integration. And I hear that you want a short-term strategy. I'm going to get to that in a moment. That, as you can imagine, is going to be radical. There is no substitute for your increasing capacity to tolerate your own experience. Because what you do is when you cannot tolerate your experience, you externalize it. You try to then control the environment so that you don't have to feel what you're feeling. The environment in this case happened to be your beloved son. See what I mean?
Yes.
So now I want to rewind, not so much in the moment of reactivity, because in moment of reactivity, it's not likely that you can change it. I want to kind of like rewind it to a whole lot earlier. And my first question is, this agreement that you believe you made with him, in all honesty, how much participation did he have in making the agreement?
Well, he wanted to listen to the music and dance, wanted some time off. I was starting a task that required me concentration, so there was some degree of agreement, but I guess I wasn't clear. It probably wasn't clear that I don't want to be disturbed in the meantime.
So he never really agreed to not disturb you?
No, thank you.
I cannot think of many five-year-olds that would have the capacity to make that agreement. I can think of almost every parent or adult that expects that from a five-year-old. It's only possible for a five-year-old to do that when overall they get as much attention as they need. In the way that we live life, I think probably the overwhelming majority of five-year-olds don't get as much attention, contact, love, intimacy, support, validation, all of these things as they need. Do you concur?
Yes.
So asking him to behave like an adult who has already learned to be numb to her or his needs, asking that of a five-year-old, not doable. However, what you can do is you can explain to him why you want to not be disturbed. Make it almost into a game. Let's set the timer and see how long you can actually do this by yourself without talking to me, just so that we learn together what's possible. See what I mean?
Yes.
Your goal is to make him a true partner rather than a subservient person whose job it is to agree to what you want. That's what I mean by radical. So that's one point of intervention. I want to hear your feedback about this.
It was eye-opening when you pointed out the agreement, even though at the time I thought it was very clear what we agreed on. Mm-hmm. Now I can see that there was no clarity in it at all. That part was sort of unspoken, that I don't want to be disturbed. That was unspoken.
Yeah.
And I thought it was unspoken and understood, but of course it's ridiculous to expect that.
Yeah. Okay. So that's one point of intervention. Then another point of intervention is you make the agreement. Let's say even the agreement is clear and he doesn't keep it. He comes to you anyway. And by the way, in case you think this is a thing with a five-year-old, what I'm talking with Gosha is true of any agreement with any person of any age. There are specific extra things that are more pronounced because somebody is five. Ultimately, human beings are human beings. So you made an agreement with him. Maybe he was clear, maybe he agreed to it, and then he's not keeping the agreement. He's coming to you anyway. In this moment, I think it is in the nature of life that the more you threaten him, the less likely he is to go away. I'll tell you why. When you start threatening him, his world becomes a little less safe. When his world is a little less safe, He needs you even more than he did a minute before. You see that?
Yes.
So you're going to try to make him go away, and he's going to feel more and more desperate about wanting to be with you. Again, this is not about 5 or 50. Try to threaten someone. It's extremely unlikely that they are going to peacefully and happily do what you want. Instead, what I would wish for all of us to be able to do is to say to him, "Dear son, I see that it's not working for you to keep this agreement, and it's also not working for me to be disturbed. I'm really, really, really in need of focusing on this task that I'm doing. What do you think we can do to make it work for both of us?" Then listen. And I don't know what he will say, and sometimes it will work and sometimes it will not. It's the vulnerability thing again. When you say, "I'm frustrated, I will get angry," you're not being vulnerable with him.
And that's how I thought that that's what I'm expressing.
Vulnerability?
Yes, that's what I thought, that informing him, giving him a valuable piece of information.
Yes, except that you're doing it in a protected and threatening
way. I see.
You can say, "You know, dear son, I am so afraid that if you don't go away, I won't be able to keep my temper. I want to, and our history tells me that I don't know how to do it. Why don't you go away for at least a few minutes so that I can collect myself?" That's more vulnerable. So that's the second point of intervention. And the third and last is after you've yelled. Because I guarantee you that if yelling has been part of what your organism knows as a way of coping with life, it's not going to stop just because we had this conversation. So you are likely to yell at him again. Okay, so you need some way to recover from that. The moment you find yourself again, you take him and you say something as simple as, "You know, it happened again. We're working on changing life so that I don't yell, and it's not yet in place. And meanwhile, I want to hear from you. Was it scary? What happened to you? What do you want me to know? What do you want to tell me?" And really just pour love on him. Not guilt, not apology. Sadness? Yes. "I'm so sad that I still don't know how to stop myself from yelling or how to find other ways to tell you when something is not working for me. So sad about it. And it's happened again, so I want to hear what happens for you when I yell at you." Something like that.
Mickey, why no apology?
Why no apology?
Yes.
Because an apology reinforces the idea that somebody is wrong. Why would you want an apology from anyone?
I was thinking because I did apologize.
Yes, but for you to apologize,
no,
make yourself wrong.
It is wrong, isn't it? To yell.
If you think that it's wrong, the behavior is likely to persist longer.
I see.
The more you can really bring compassion and tenderness to the reality of your helplessness and that you're yelling at him, to find a way to tolerate your own inner experience, the more you can bring compassion to that, the less you will need to yell. The more you judge yourself, the more that part of you will rebel and yell even further. That's usually how it works. Okay?
Thank you.
Oh, I wish we were in physical space and I could wrap my arms around you and give you a moment of rest.
Thank you, Miki.
Thank you, Gosha. I would like to hear from a couple of other people. So if anyone was moved and affected by this piece of work and has something that you want to express from within your heart, please press 1. Hi, Maria Teresa.
I am so touched by the whole compassion with which you have dealt with this situation, and my heart yearned for having had that possibility for myself. I mean, I could see what a difference it would have been for me in my life, and how incredibly wonderful to be able to hear it. It feels like a blessing showering through my body. I'm just so very touched by your mentoring in this situation, and I'm very touched by Gosha's deep feelings and vulnerability and honesty, which touches me very deeply as well.
Thank you. Gosha, how are you doing hearing this?
Very warm inside and supported.
Thank you. Let's hear from Ilona.
I feel that Gosha described certain passages in my life also, both as the 5-year-old and then receiving physical beatings and then being a caregiver for the same person now, my mother now, and finding myself yelling at her when I was trying to defend myself. She is going into dementia, and so she's beginning to blame me for things that I haven't done.
Mm-hmm.
I can see the look of fear on her face when I plead with her, but I'm yelling, please believe me that I didn't do this thing. It feels like a catch-22.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So I want to pause you because I want to keep the focus on Gosha and you taking it to something else. So I'm wondering if you can take a breath and just stay present with yourself while I move to something else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Natasha.
I just felt very deeply moved by your reaching in and by Gosha's reaching out. When she first started to speak, I almost had this image of this, you know, little one curled up into a corner blaming herself. And I didn't know if she would be able to come out. And I so admired the teaching and just staying with what you were saying to her and her ability to stay with the grief and stay with the sadness. And I think sometimes I know that can be really scary to stay there, and it moved. I just was so in awe of the whole process, and it really touched my heart. And Gosha, thank you for your courage and for your sharing. And thank you, Mahid, for modeling what it is to reach into someone's heart and hold them in a very graceful way. Thank you.
Thank you, Natasha. I love that image of me reaching in and Gosha reaching out. That's one that I think will stay. Thank you. Okay, Gosha, just for closure, how are you doing in this moment?
Part of the weight, the heavy weight that I had, it lifted. I'm lighter.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. I just want to say this was a pretty massive piece of work that you did, so I would like to plead with you to do something kind to yourself today. I don't know if a bath is something that is soothing for you, or music, whatever it is that is really providing you with peace and calm and soothing and nurturing, please do that today.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Miki.
Okay, so that was, I guess, our opening circle. And I think what I would like you to do now is to be in small groups for a few moments and look at the work that you did at home to prepare for today's class and review it. Pick one situation, one relationship, and see if you can even do like little role plays to see if you can imagine slowly a conversation. I did a little bit of modeling, even though we were talking about last week and about different topics, I did a fair amount of modeling of speaking from the heart and hearing and making connection requests. So see if you can do a little bit of role playing and give each other feedback and practice with connection requests. And then we'll come back together, do some questions and further exploration about it. My thought is, you know, then try it out. Take one of those situations and just try out a very, very, very slow motion role play. Sort of like what I did with Natasha from somebody's situation. So let's do this for 15 minutes and then we'll come back to harvest. Welcome back. I would like to hear from each of the two groups what came up in your group, any comments that you have and questions and what you'd like to focus attention on for the next bit of time. Natasha.
I shared about an issue that I'd had with my husband this morning, and we were actually processing the earlier thing that I'd shared, and I was nervous about having a conversation and wanting his feedback. And I, you know, the way I heard a lot of his comments initially this morning, I heard them as judgmental. And this exercise really helped me to just connect with his needs in a way that has been missing for me all day, because I've been very frustrated with him all day and I've felt shut down and kind of sad and disconnected. So there is for me a real heart opening in just connecting to and being curious about what he might be needing and feeling, listening for his world behind what comes across as judgments. I experienced a real heart opening.
I love that. I'd like to know in particular how you use connection requests.
We didn't get to that part as much, but I think the request was more modeled on what we think the work that you'd done with me a little bit earlier with the Laura piece was. Would you be willing to find a different way to communicate with me? And it might just mean listening while I'm speaking, because I do have a strong need for safety. And if there's something you'd really like to say, could you check in with me if you'd like to offer an opinion?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so somebody played him and was able to hear that.
We didn't do role playing.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Thanks. And Shannon?
Jean was gracious to be my sister in a role play, and I was able to start with just a request to see if she had the capacity to hear me about, or to really to talk about the conflict that we've been in, that we've been avoiding talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized like how scary, just like my own struggle to make that type of a request, because I feel like I'm so attached to the outcome and I'm so scared to hear someone say no to that.
Yeah.
It's almost like in the past, like I haven't asked that because it almost feels like if I can just figure out what I want to say and how I want to say it in a way that can say it with kindness or love, like that feels like a big enough accomplishment, and then I don't want to risk someone else saying they actually don't have the capacity to hear it because I'm so bad. Maybe it's just I really want to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am a appreciating your bringing to the table this incredible vulnerability around making requests of any kind, especially when we already feel vulnerable. So I want to, first of all, bring to you and to everyone else a comment made by a colleague of mine many years ago who, she's already forgotten it, but I found it very useful and pass it on to people as often as I remember, which is, at that time she said she was working on making requests that were so small that it was easy for people to say yes to them, and it was easy for her to hear no to them. And so there is a way in which kind of like we are not very imaginative in how we make requests. We either don't ask for anything or we jump 15 steps and ask for the fullness of what we want without ever establishing all the intermediate steps. So I wouldn't want to make a request about something big before I establish that there is sufficient connection and understanding between us along the way. Wondering how that makes sense for you.
I guess I would love more clarity about how to know you have that.
Those are the questions that I'm interested in. Is exactly the question of how do I know that I have that. So there are many questions that can help me assess that. One is something as basic as, do you have the trust that I understand your experience? Me asking this of the other person. That is a connection request. Because if the other person doesn't have that trust, there's nowhere we can go together. Because
yeah.
Anywhere that I try to go, that person will be kind of like holding on to their position. You're not going anywhere because you haven't heard me. And if you go anywhere, you're going to leave me behind and my needs. And I'm not going to go for that. We do it all the time with each other. So I want to make sure that wherever I go with whoever I'm speaking with, that we go there together.
That came up in the role play that I was asking my sister to hear me about what was going on for me and my decision. And it came up that I hadn't taken the time to hear her and that was this huge block. And I think I also realized that part of the reason I was scared, I kind of like half listened and then I made this assumption like, oh, I get it. You know, I get it. It's about support or it's about care. Kind of just put it in this little box.
Yeah.
And I think I was afraid that if I really opened myself up to really feel it, that it would be me giving in, you know, and letting go. The struggle you talked about in a couple classes ago about just was so scared it would mean that I would end up agreeing with her and I would change my decision, which I had worked so hard to come to.
My favorite little story of that happened with a four-year-old. I wasn't there, but I heard about it, where the father says to the four-year-old, asks her to reflect what she heard. And she says, I don't want to do that because if I do that, I will want to do what you want me to do. It's beautiful the way she got it. Mm-hmm. So yes, opening our heart to hearing from another person changes our experience. If we're not doing that, we're not really in dialogue. We're just trying to get them to agree. The point is to establish all those little steps. Essentially, I'm aiming for not only hearing the other person, of establishing clarity with them that they experience me as having heard them. Establishing clarity with the other person that they heard me and that they know whether or not I feel heard to my satisfaction. When we both know that we both heard each other, that's when we can look at the outcome. Until then, it's just little steps. All right, I'll hear from Jean and then from Ilona. Jean.
Actually, you just stated with such clarity or precision what I was thinking about when I had this role play with Shannon, because what came up for me when she introduced it as having an outcome where she could stay home for the holidays and not join the family and be clear about that and get that across, perhaps what she wanted even more than that and that her sister also wanted. And I was going back to something you said in an earlier part of the evening, that what we both really want together is deeper understanding in our relationship, mm-hmm. not just this one outcome. Mm-hmm. The way you said it, each person having so much clarity and confidence that they've been fully heard the way they want to be, is wonderful. Thank you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Ilona?
There was a point at which you were speaking with Shannon and you suggested saying something like, do you trust that I have your care for me or your love for me in my experience of you? Or do you remember anything like that you said?
Not exactly. First of all, you can always listen to the recording and find it. But it's close to the end, so you can listen to it. And second, it might have been something like, do you trust that I have an understanding of your experience?
Oh, understanding. So it's not even, do you trust that I have your love for me and my sense for you? I mean, that would not be necessary.
No.
Okay.
It's also, you know, if I ask you, do you trust that I care about you? There's a right answer.
Yeah.
I really don't want to ask a question for which there's a right answer, because if I do, then the dialogue
is over.
It almost
feels like a trap. Yeah, it feels like a trap or something.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. So now I just want to go quickly through the circle, and if you can do what's staying with you after today. I'll start with Gosha and then Jean.
Why don't you stay with Sadness?
Thank you. Jean and then Shannon.
Do you trust I understand your experience?
Thank you. Shannon and then Natasha.
New focus on checking in about capacity to be heard before asking for someone to reflect back.
Thank you. Natasha and then Ilona.
Finding a point of connection from the get-go.
Ilona and then Maria Teresa.
Taking 100% responsibility for whatever dynamic, relationship dynamic is going on.
Maria Teresa and then I.
Grief is a measure of your love.
For me, it's just the magic of deep connection that happened today. Lori?
That there's no substitution for going into your experience.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, everyone. Talk to you next week. Bye.